As we continue through Peter's epistle, I've already shared with you the strange habit that my dog has. It was delightful to bring that to the attention of the kids. Does anyone else's dog do that? Is my dog just odd and strange? This is the latest rock she's brought in, and she somehow works her jaw around these, which just evidences her strange fascination. She just craves these rocks. She craves them to the point of trying to sneak them in behind our backs if she can. And what's interesting to me is she shares a fascination that obviously the fisherman Peter has. He has a fascination, as you noticed in this reading, with rock, which is no surprise. Rock is a strong metaphor for God throughout the sacred scriptures. We read of God is my rock, be my rock. There is a rock that we have like no other rock, which always draws attention to stability and foundation of enduring faithfulness. The sense that there is an unmovable place to stand at all times as the chaos of the world swirls around us. Jesus himself we'll say at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, you can build your life on two foundations. The foundation of shifting sand, and you will find that when the rains come, then the sands go away and there's no foundation left. Or you can build your house on the foundation of his teachings, and then you're building them on a rock that endures. Peter makes much of this metaphor of rock, and you notice for him, Jesus is the rock in two ways. Jesus is the rock in regard to being a cornerstone. And he uses that language as he quotes from Isaiah, "See, I am laying," right there about the third paragraph down, "I'm laying in Zion a stone, a cornerstone, chosen and precious." And we all know what a cornerstone is. It's that pivotal stone that aligns all the other stones in a building. If that's not aligned properly, then the whole building is going to be out of whack. And so it becomes an ultimate priority that that capstone is where it, that cornerstone is where it ought to be. But he also refers to Jesus as a capstone. And you see that in verse 7. As he quotes, "The stone that the builders rejected has become the very head of the corner." That's how our NRSV puts it, but that's just a way of saying it's the capstone. It is the stone that is put in last. So the way he wants to describe Jesus is he's the first and foundational stone. He is the last and final stone upon which all the other stones rest. He is that stone that is the top of the archway. If you remove that, all the other stones fall to pieces. So that Peter wants to say he's the first, he's the last. He's the foundation, he's the goal. There's also a way to look at that capstone as keystone. And at the top of our Washington Monument, you have one of those keystones. It's the very final rock that's put into place. And it's put there to show that the whole point of the monument is to highlight this priority, to highlight the top. So that Peter is using rocks in a very creative way. He wants to say, Jesus is our rock. But not just Jesus is our rock, but Jesus is the cornerstone. Jesus is the capstone. Jesus is the foundation. Jesus is the pinnacle and the goal. And when you begin to hear him speaking like that, then you can see why he shifts into another rock place. He wants to start talking about what it means to be the house of God. But now he's going to speak in language of a spiritual house. Verse 5, "Like living stones, let yourselves be built into a spiritual house." And he wants to highlight how if Jesus, as God's rock and foundation and goal, shifts our understanding of perhaps of who God is for us, then it ought to shift our understanding of what it means to be God's people. And he refers to this temple, which is incredibly important in our Hebrew Bible. We often think of God as being anywhere, but for an ancient Hebrew, you could pray to God anywhere, but if you wanted to encounter God's glory, God's presence, if you wanted to be at the epicenter of worship, then you had to be at the temple in Jerusalem. It was the place of God's glory, the place of God's presence, the place of action where the priest served and where sacrifices were made and where worship is offered. Now Peter says, in light of Jesus being the foundation and the goal, that this understanding of a building made of stone has shifted, and we are to understand ourselves as, verse 5, a spiritual house and a holy priesthood, and that we offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. He wants us to see the house of God in a totally different way. That it's not just located at one place in a building made of stone, but it's comprised of God's followers, Christ followers, who are the living stones, who are the rolling stones. They're not just set in one place, and who are given this privilege that Israel did not have. One priest once a year, and a few people that had the privilege of being priest could offer sacrifice. Now he says to the whole church community, and for him predominantly Gentiles, you are a holy priesthood. You offer spiritual sacrifices. And when you begin to think like that, that metaphor of rock takes on huge dimensions. Jesus is the foundation and the goal, the reason for all God's redemptive purposes and grace. That means the temple is not the final place where God's glory is manifest. It's manifest through the flesh of Christ and subsequently through the flesh of Christ followers as they become living stones, a holy priesthood offering spiritual sacrifices. Now, when you begin to think of spiritual sacrifices, you think, you know, what's a spiritual sacrifice? There's a number of passages where Paul and others will speak this way. I have this in the King James because it's how I memorized it. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, that is, to the spirit of this age, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that there's a process, in order that you may know what is that good and perfect and acceptable will of God. So all of a sudden, Paul says, spiritual sacrifices are not just located in a building made of stone, but that as you walk as living stones, you're called to make your entire life a sacrifice to God, a place of offering God gifts and representing God to others and representing others to God. Now, the thing I love about this quote, Charles Swindoll once said, the problem with the living sacrifice is that they tend to crawl off the altar. And that's what we tend to do, you know. Making sacrifices of just money, or in the Old Testament, of dead animals, offering an animal and having it be killed, that's a lot easier than in the invitation to be a rolling stone, being a continual sacrifice, a priest wherever you go. It also takes away the whole idea that somehow, you know, rich is the priest and we're all just the people. No, we are a holy priesthood altogether. The Protestant Reformation was all about reclaiming that priesthood of all believers, that it is the church corporate that is meant to be this body, and we all together are meant to offer these sacrifices. Now, this still doesn't tell you what the sacrifices are. That's why I love Hebrews, and this just gives you a little push forward. Through Jesus, then, let us continually offer a sacrifice of praise to God, that is the fruit of lips that confess His name. So, worship. But then, do not neglect to do good and to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God. So, you have worship, good acts, acts of mercy, acts of charity. All those are ways of mediating God's presence to others as a rolling stone on the move, a stone that has come to realize that Christ is the cornerstone and Christ is the goal. You have that in verse 5, but then you have in verse 9, if you'll notice, a wonderful passage where Peter says, you are a chosen race. Now, that used to be language that was exclusive for Israel. Now, Peter says to the Gentiles, not to exclude the Jews, but to include the Gentiles now. Says, you also are a chosen race. You are a royal priesthood, something that used to be just by lineage, something that you had to be born into. You're not royalty unless you're born into it. You're not a priest unless you're of a certain tribe. But now Peter includes everyone that's in the church and says, you're a royal priesthood. You're a holy nation, not the nation you're in. You as the church are the holy nation. You are God's own people. In order that, here's the reason why, you may proclaim the mighty acts of Him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. So if you put verse 5, spiritual sacrifices, with this, what is the church? The church is a group of people on the move, a group of living stones becoming like the living stone, building their life off the cornerstone, the foundation of Christ, the capstone, the goal of Christ. And as they move forward, they're offering spiritual sacrifices, but they also gather together to proclaim the mighty acts of Him who called you out into darkness. In other words, to worship. One of the most important things to establish that is very hard to maintain in our culture is, why go to church at all? You know, if it's really not that this building's not the church, once you and I leave, the church has left the building. This is not the church. You are the church. We are the church. When we're all gone, this is just a tool. It's a means that allows us to gather. But the church, like Elvis, has left the building. And they're on the move as rolling stones. And so the question is, why do we gather? What does it mean? What is church about? Why gather at all? And if you ask people that, you'll usually get responses like, well, just don't gather. What a waste of time. I got better things I could do on Sunday morning. Or if you get someone who's really thoughtful, they'll say, well, why go to church? I go to church because of the sense of community it offers. That's not a bad answer. But you need to realize you can get community from the Boy Scouts. You can get community from a bridge club or from a lodge meeting. It's not just community. It's worship. We are the holy nation, the priest, that gather together and declare to one another so that we can declare to the world, Christ is the foundation. Christ is the goal. Christ is worthy of our ultimate allegiance. That we are the holy nation and He is the head. That we are the ones that gather together and say, we have to remember our priorities. Because our world is there to readjust our priorities and tell us, well, the foundation, really, the security of your life is your finances. The foundation, the security of your life is your skills. The foundation and security of your life is, you know, fill in the blank. And the goal of your life is, oh, well, I guess it should be happiness. Or the goal of your life should be, you know, whatever. But it's the church that gathers together and says, hold on. There is a deeper foundation and a greater goal, which is everlasting, because all those foundations crumble in the end. And all those goals show themselves to be temporary in the end. That the ultimate foundation and goal is to remember who we are and to remember why we gather, that we are God's people on a move, rolling stones, following the living stone. That we have, if you will, to make it quite simple, come to share God's view of Jesus. Verse 4, look at this with me. Come to Him, a living stone, though rejected by mortals, yet chosen and precious in God's sight. So that God's evaluation of Jesus, like a master mason evaluating a cornerstone or a capstone, is that this stone is the one. It's chosen. This stone is a treasure. It's precious. Now that's God's evaluation. And thus you come to verse 7. To you then who believe, He is precious. So that we begin to share God's thoughts after God, which is the deepest spirituality, that we're thinking God's thoughts after God, that we are sharing in that which delights God. And what we find is we have come to choose this cornerstone and declare this cornerstone and capstone as precious. Now, not everyone does. That should be obvious to us all, but we sometimes forget that within the message of the gospel is this awareness. And Peter quotes, the two quotes he has in the middle of our reading, one comes from Isaiah, the other one comes from Psalm, to remind us that this stone's not precious or valuable or even foundational or even a goal for most. Thus says the Lord God, I'm laying in Zion a foundation stone. It's tested, it's precious, it's a sure foundation, but Psalms, the stone that the builders rejected, has become the chief cornerstone. Others test, like a mason, the stone of Jesus. They evaluate it, and they say, eh, and they toss the stone aside. It's rejected. It's useless. It's not a treasure. It, in fact, is just junk. And you toss that stone aside like a discarded piece of the puzzle, and you seek other foundations and other goals. And that becomes the way that is not the way of Christ. It's not the way of God. These passages are there so that Peter's readers can understand. Remember, they're a small suffering community. They are surrounded by people who have no interest in Christ, no interest in hearing of their message or understanding who they are. Peter wants them to know the world rejects. God knows. God knew this would happen. That line in the end of verse 8, they stumble because they disobey the word as they were destined to do, does not mean, as Calvin would say, that these are predestined individuals for damnation. This is Peter's way of saying the rejection of people doesn't surprise God. I mean, it's part of the plan. In fact, at the heart of our faith is the Christ, the living stone, the head of the church, comes and is rejected. So that this is no surprise, and therefore, instead of being like those who reject to evaluate this foundation and goal and say, I really have no place for that in my life, we're to be people who find that foundation and goal precious and valuable and worthy of our allegiance and worthy of shaping our identity in such a way that we see ourselves in God's sight as kings and priests. As people who are God's own. And therefore, as we draw this to conclusion, you see verse 4, because the one verse that really has a command, the one verse that actually tells us to do something, is verse 4. And this is why Peter says, like a good evangelical pastor, come to Jesus. Do you see that? Come to Him. Now, he's not saying this to unbelievers. He's saying this to believers. He's not saying this to those who are not part of the community. He's saying this to people who are the community. And the tense in the Greek is, keep coming to Jesus. And so the idea is, come to Jesus, come to this living stone, verse 4. Understand that He's rejected by some, but don't let that dissuade you, because this living stone is chosen and precious in God's sight. And therefore, you, verse 5, like living stones, be built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God. Well, that's a tall order. Be a spiritual house, a holy priesthood, offering sacrifices. How do we maintain that? Well, come to Jesus, keep coming to Jesus. But even beyond that, we come to the very opening verse, because this is Peter setting the stage for everything he's about to say. Verse 2, like newborn infants, crave, long for, deeply desire the pure spiritual milk of the Word or the Gospel, so that by it you may grow into salvation, if indeed you've tasted that the Lord is good. So that prior to all of this, Peter's telling us Christ is the foundation, Christ is the goal, but if you're to grow, you're going to have to crave a deeper understanding of this. You're going to have to deeply desire that this is actually what occurs in your community and what impacts your life. Because if you don't deeply desire it, you won't keep coming. You won't come to Jesus. If you don't deeply desire it, then you won't grow in salvation. And what Peter's looking for is growth like a baby. Because at the end of the day, we're all beginners. No matter how advanced we think we are, we need to keep coming to Jesus. No matter how spiritual we think we are, we need to crave like a baby does. You know how a baby craves milk. You can put anything in front of a baby, a diamond, jewelry, cash, anything. They don't care. They want milk. Milk is all they're concerned about. And if they don't get it, they so deeply desire it, the whole world will know as they wail in the presence of anyone that's present, in order to make it clear that they have a single-minded devotion to one thing. They are hungry and they want more of that milk which they've tasted and know is good. And that's what Peter's referring to. If indeed you've tasted, I've tasted. We have at the very least had this taste that allows us to see the goodness of Christ, the foundation that He invites us to have, the goal that He longs for us to follow. We've tasted enough to know so that our deepest longing ought to be this milk, the word of the gospel, the word of grace, the word that points us in the direction of the living stone who is our foundation and goal and invites us to be stones on the move So that at the end of the day, we are offered this wonderful challenge to wrestle with the fact that we don't just go to church. We are the church. And that when we gather together, we're gathering together in a tool, an instrument. The real church is not the building, not the stones, because the stones are the wood or the framework. They are just that. But the church, the people, the spiritual house, is actually that which is called to grow. And that growth is not just limited to numerics and statistics. It's growth that you can't really discern. It's growth in craving, growth in foundation, growth in goal, growth, if you will, in faithfulness. And so this morning we're going to go through the practice which is worshipful, which is priestly, that very much represents for us once again all that Peter's trying to get across to us. We come to Jesus, we come to the bread, we come to the wine, and we hear these words: "This is my body broken for you, rejected by the world. This is my blood shed for you, rejected by the world." Considered so valueless that really the point was to eliminate. But we don't reject God's accepted. We instead accept God's rejected in the salvation. We receive the risen Christ's life in the supper. We come to Jesus who's rejected and discarded to the world. But what we say is, He's precious to us, so precious to us, we come craving. We not only come craving, we will receive this word because we want to remember that the cornerstone and capstone of our lives is not a failing one or a temporary one, but it is the eternal rock of salvation revealed in Christ that we rest ourselves upon and we lean toward as our goal, so that at the end of the day, my invitation simply to you, and it sounds a bit simplistic, would be like Mimi. She's fascinated with the rock. She craves it. She wants to be around it. In fact, sometimes it looks like she's even worshiping it.